So, hi. Today I'm here with Dean Loft. He's a software engineer from down under, Melbourne, Australia. He recently launched Tech Deck Live, and he's also a music producer. Like, Dean, what's that all about? Like, did I forget anything?
I produced music from I took it seriously from 2006 up until a few years ago. I had to focus on work instead. But I was a hip hop producer. I've produced like a bunch of different artists. One of our songs actually got about 300,000 streams on it. So wasn't too bad. It features Method Man from the Wu-Tang Clan. So yeah, it was pretty cool experience doing all that.
So, what's your professional background then?
I'm a DevOps engineer at the moment. I went to school over here in Australia, and then after school I joined the Navy. I was a communications and information systems sailor. So that was basically doing the Navy but doing computers in the Navy. And that's how I knew that I liked tech and what I was good at. I did a lot of work with radio communications, satellite communications, and we looked after all the computer networks on the ship there as well. After that, I moved into desktop support. I contracted for defence in Australia, and that's what I did there. And eventually, I worked my way up to become a network administrator. And then I was doing systems administration after that as well. And then eventually DevOps. Throughout my career, I've worked for defense. That was primarily where I worked. But I also did a bit of time in mining oil and gas, which was interesting. I looked after some of the mining villages up north in Australia there. And we used to design and roll out the GPON network system. So we would do their internet and entertainment systems as well. It was pretty cool. It was a very good business until Netflix and better internet came around.
Yeah, I see. That
Yeah.
that's like pretty much stuff. Like a lot of stations, a lot of a variety of experience there. So, what's the tech stack you're working right now with mostly?
At the moment, my work tech stack is Rails. Postgres, AWS, GitHub, Redis, and we sort of do the typical Rails thing. In my own projects, I'm using newer stuff. So I'm using Rails 8. Solid Queue is their new queuing system that just uses disk only. And I'm using that along with Mission Control. And SQLite is my database as well. But I did spend some time in TypeScript with Cloudflare and Workers. Originally, I had built Tech Deck and rolled it out in that, but I got caught doing some when I was generating the images, I had some issues there. I do want to go back and figure out what I was doing wrong, but I rely heavily on Puppeteer, and I needed that, so I shifted back to Rails and made it there. That's
I
the
lost a
I use.
bit of track of the Rails community, like after it came out in what was that? Maybe 2008, 2009-ish,
I'm
something.
quite new to coding and like web development. Most of my tech career has been in the ops side of things. But yeah, Rails
I
has been
see.
going since the early 2000s. Like some of the stuff I've been reading about them and the evolution that they've had. I don't know if you keep track of 37 Signals or
Yeah,
those
sometimes.
things and related companies to that, but I follow DHH quite a bit. And
So that's basically the opposite guy to DevOps. It's the
Well,
build your
he
own stuff
knows a
guy.
lot about DevOps because Rails actually they build something called Camel, which is a deployment system that. It sits on top of Docker, and that's something I'm going to adopt eventually. And yeah,
Yeah,
they
that's
know
really
their
cool.
DevOps through that. They
There's also like
build a custom
tools
port.
like Coolify and
Yeah, that's right.
a lot of trends are going towards self-hosted these days,
Yeah.
I guess. But like Regarding the Rails topic, I think Rails, just like PHP and maybe Django on Python, you would say that's boring tech, but it's battle tested. It's rock solid. Yeah, I mean, people said it's dead like for 10 years now. So what's your take on that? Why do you rely on these kind of technologies?
The problem is that the reason I moved to Cloudflare and TypeScript in the first place with Astro is because when I was using Rails, it felt like driving a semi-trailer. Like, no matter if I was going down to the grocery store, I wouldn't take a semi-trailer. So if I'm developing an application, then why would I? And that was the issue when you had to bring things like Postgres and Redis with you. Then it starts to get a bit too much work to be worthwhile. So that's where the new version of Rails is good, because I can just have a single server or a single node server, and everything just runs on there. And because it's all disk-based, I can scale it vertically, and then I just don't have to think about a lot of things. I've got workers and jobs and scheduling all running without any external dependencies. And that's the kind of benefit that I was getting when I was looking at Cloudflare and TypeScript. I just really didn't like the development experience with Cloudflare. Wrangler made it really difficult.
Oh, really?
It's good in most things, but like, say, for example, you have three or four workers and you want a local database shared between them all. It gets really complicated there. They all seem to have their own local database. And
I see.
If you use Puppeteer, you have to use a remote flag to develop with it. And I think a lot of it might have been a skill issue, but I just felt so lost trying to figure out the right way to do all that.
Yeah, I think the deal with Wrangler and all these serverless platforms is you're very quick to set up like an initial project, right. A small API or whatever.
Yeah.
But when things just start becoming more complex,
the issues start evolving. TechDeck was a really good project for Rails, and it wasn't that great for workers with Astro. Like, I was jumping into taking screenshots with the browser basically straight away. So, and apparently Puppeteer on workers isn't really designed for that. So I ran into trouble straight away. I do want to figure it out, but I just haven't got around to it yet.
So I mentioned it, and you mentioned it already, like this TechDeck. So what is that about?
I just wanted to build something, really. So I saw there was a similar project, actually. I know what it is now. It's called TeapotMon. And in a way, I almost stole their idea, but I stumbled onto that ages ago. And then I couldn't find it again, and I sort of had some ideas about things I wanted to build that were similar to it. And I ended up putting TechDeck together, which is a lot different to what he was doing. But mine sort of focused on an automatic, like, link tree page almost. Like, the only input in for TechDeck is the username. And the idea is the rest
like
of
like
it.
Like a handle on X?
Yeah, that's right. And from your handle, you get a useful profile generated. That's the initial goal for TechDeck.
And so how's that profile generated?
So basically, I pull in the handle, and then before Twitter decided to change their API rules recently, I used a third-party vendor called socialdata.tools. And I would take the profile details and then pass them into what I needed. And then I would then again search for like their recent tweets and their replies. And I would generate a bit of a profile based on what they had in their bio and how they posted. And it came up with the profile from there. So I use Google Gemini and the Flash model. And yeah, basically I just send all the data in and say, give me these outputs based on this information. And then the rest is from Gemini.
So you basically put your Twitter handle in or X handle in there. Then it grabs your tweets, grabs your replies, grabs your bio information, and then use AI to actually expand the profile and make a beautiful card, right?
Yeah, and that's the idea. And I'll have like a JSON endpoint from there as well. Because I know, you know, when vibe coding games was a big thing, one of the things
like
I
Fly
really,
Peter.
That was a cool project. One of the things I realized when I wanted to vibe code a game was that I needed assets, I needed characters, I needed all this stuff that I didn't just have on hand. So I thought maybe Tech Deck can be like something I use for that as well. So if I do want to create a game, I've already got all these characters. So all of my characters in a game from now will be just be based on whoever's in Tech Deck.
And I'll basically like your source for avatars.
Yeah, that's right. Just a seed to source for that as well. One of the things I'm trying to do in the background, I want to make a card game based on it, and that'll be the demo of how to use it. But you could use it for anything you want. It doesn't actually have that much of a clear purpose. It's more of a reason and an excuse for me to build something.
Yeah, that's the best feeling to get something out of the door, right?
Yeah, that's right. And because it is actually something half decent now, like I set up the leaderboards there, and I actually find it good to watch that because you can see who's growing quickly, you can see who's popular, and it's not all of Twitter. It's just people that tend to actually have the same interests and are at a reasonably similar skill level too. But I've met some really cool people based on the Twitter circles that I'm around.
Yeah, I mean, we met on Twitter as well. So
yeah, that's right. And it's people that I probably wouldn't just meet day to day in my normal life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we would never have met because we are like living on the opposite side of the world, actually. So yeah, I mean, networking is important.
Yeah.
Like, how much time did you put into Tech Deck to make it look like it looks now?
Probably way more than I should have, but I've been at it for months, really.
Okay.
Mostly because I, at work, like I do DevOps, but I also want to be able to do the full stack engineering as well. So as part of learning this, I just wanted to build something. And for months, I got nothing up, and that's where I was stuffing around with Cloudflare and Astro. So if you count that time, then I might have been at Tech Deck for like 3 to 6 months. But this recent Rails build has been more like 1 month because I pulled everything apart and rebuilt it properly. And because I already know how it works, rebuilding it in Rails wasn't that challenging.
I mean, that's probably an important learning. I mean, not that Cloudflare is bad, not that TypeScript is bad, but if your goal is to ship something, to get something out of the door, probably it's best to stick with the technologies you already know. I think that's the most important learning.
Yeah, and it highlighted how much better I am at Rails than Astro. Well, I love working with Astro, but my skills in Rails, like, The 3 years that I've been working in it professionally, it really shows because I've been dealing with Rails problems every day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I personally like TypeScript, but I don't like the, let's say, tooling in the JavaScript ecosystem because every now and then it changes and you don't really know what's going on. There is transpiling here and like
I feel like
there.
I have to be good at JavaScript, though, for some reason. Like, something in me wants to be good at TypeScript. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great language. There's also this documentation about the report on YouTube about the inventor of TypeScript, basically. That's very impressive to see.
There's always drama, though, that sort of seems unnecessary. Like, I don't know if you've seen recently, but the guy behind Veep called out Bun for like not using related builders and that kind of thing, and there always seems to be arguments around that stuff in JavaScript.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's also like not only Boon, there's also Dino.
Yeah, that's right, which is meant to be a better version of Node.js or something. Because is that Ryan Dahl? He didn't like the way he originally made Node.js, or which I guess lessons learned and everything.
I think like probably the most problematic thing about the whole JavaScript ecosystem is that it's lacking a decent standard library. And so people invent it all over again and all over again.
There's no standard on Rails for JavaScript. I think Adonis is pretty close. There's some other frameworks that are close. And I know Hono exists and Workers. But I had to really force it to get the equivalent of Rails into JavaScript.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is Next, but this comes with a whole different stack of problems. And I mean, it does some things really good.
I don't use anything Vercel or Vercel related because it feels like it makes things too easy. So I've always avoided Vercel, even though they're probably great. But I don't have that much experience with them.
Yeah. Okay, that's for the JavaScript brand. Back to your project, you have coded the app in Rails?
Yeah.
What do you use for the front end?
It's just Tailwind with Rails views. So everything I use is Rails out of the box as default as I can get it. I had to mess around with the Tailwind config. Actually, Rails 8 has a really interesting way of dealing with Tailwind and builds. It uses something called prop shaft, and it means I don't actually have a Tailwind config, which confuses LLMs a lot. It'll say you're using an agent in Cursor or something, you'll always see it cycling through like, oh, we'll look for the Tailwind config, and you have to interrupt and be like, no, we're using prop shaft, you can't do that. Even though it's in my rules and everything, it'll still get stuck on it. That's awesome.
I see. What do you use as a database?
Database is SQLite. So Rails connects with Active Record, and you just define your schema using Rails and run migrations that way. And because it's flat file, it makes it so simple. If I wanted to scale to more servers, it might be a bit more challenging, but given it's the one place, it's so easy. I've actually got a custom system that automatically backs up the database, puts it in object storage, and I can restore from one of those. Like if I just choose and say, oh, I need it from a week ago, can I just import that? I've set up something to do that.
Yeah. It's so Active Record is both the ORM and the migrations manager that comes with Rails.
I'm sure it's got a proper name there for it. But I'm just using whatever's in Rails. I don't bother with complicated migrations. Like at work, we'll have up and down commands for our migrations. But in my own project, I've just got it normally. So they just run through. I try to keep them to a minimum, but as I've gone, you can see me adding fields and then removing fields. I could clean them up, but I don't.
Okay, so we have Rails, we have Tailwind, JavaScript guys would call server-generated pages. Yeah. Then we have SQLite, which like as a flat file can be stored to any S3 bucket or even to your USB pen drive or something.
Yep. That's right.
Then we have Gemini, and you use that to generate or to summarize the profile information, to generate text, to generate images, right? Yep. Is there something like probably in that case, one of the most complex tasks is some kind of background jobs?
Yes, that's right.
Need to wait for the reply from the AI or the response from Gemini to actually do something, and you can't I can imagine you can't do that like within the lifetime of the request of the user, so there needs to be some kind of background management. And so how do you do that?
Rails gives me Solid Queue, which is it uses a SQLite database. So it's disk-based, and that replaces the need for something like Redis. And it comes with a tool called Mission Control. So I just get a web bash, a web based panel that I can sign into, has basic authentication on it. And I set up everything as a service, and then it will have a job. And say, for example, a new user wants to sign up, they have a submission job. So they see that their job's gone through, and then the background process starts. And once, if they entered their email, they'll get an email once it gets to that point. But yeah,
and all of that is also like part of the Rails distribution.
Yeah, that's right.
Rails framework.
It's a little bit more complicated to set up behind the scenes, because you actually have to start the workers and the queues and everything. But that just happens as part of my initialization script. So it's just the same as running Rails. I only actually run one instance.
Oh, so you have it's a background task processor. That means you need to have some background process running, obviously.
Yeah, that's right. Which is usually Redis and a lot more complicated.
Okay, I see. And where do you host all of that?
I'm using DigitalOcean.
It's a VPS, basically.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you come from a DevOps background, so I think you have probably a very interesting setup on pushing that from your GitHub repository, or
Actually, surprisingly simple. Initially, I was using Docker Compose, and because of Rails allowing us to do everything on disk, I just had a couple of Docker Compose services there, and it all just comes up on the same system. I am using Kamal now, which adds a proxy between the server and the rest of it. And that's what Basecamp or 37 Signals maintains that. And it makes deployment so simple. Like, I can run, basically, if I give it a server with SSH keys, I can run Kamal setup, and it sets up the server for me. And then I can run Kamal deploy. And as long as the config's correct, it'll deploy properly. And it works so good. And you can set that up with GitHub Actions and CI and CD as well. So I do have all that set up. And it is, my configuration's relatively simple. Like, it allows you to have hooks, and you can do a lot more complicated things. But given the stack that I work with, it's nice to just be able to leave it empty.
So and how much time do you put into that project right now? Like, what is the cost of maintenance, so to say?
If you look at my GitHub history, I've sort of been working on it every day for the last 2 or 3 months, just little sort of chunks at a time. I have had downtime as well during that, but yeah, it's probably 2 to 3 hours a day maybe. Some weekends I'll be doing 8 or 10 hour days on it, but then other days I won't touch it or think about it.
Okay, thank you. So that's I mean there is a lot of things to learn from that. I think the most important one we already said.
It's learning and repeating the same things. So basically, I'll have something like light mode and dark mode is something that I added recently, and I was able to do that quickly only because I've done that before a couple of times in other projects. Yeah. So I knew how to tackle that straight away. And so when someone asked for it, I was like, I can do this quickly. If it was the first time I'd ever done it, I probably couldn't have, but because I knew exactly what I needed to do, I just smashed that out in a single night.
Yeah, and I think that's also like a good example of the whole point that you're making. Like, use the tools that make the things you want easy.
Yeah,
don't go for the latest stuff. Don't doesn't need to be always the latest and greatest. Just use battle test technology that you already know, and then keep your setup simple. Right? I mean, Kamal is a great way to do that. There's also other stuff like Coolify or something like that.
Yeah. And also, the other thing I try to do a lot of is to use the same technology that I use at work. So because I use Rails at work, it helps me to be better at Rails. And not only do I get to use Rails here, but I get to explore parts of it that I wouldn't be able to at work. Like I wouldn't have been able to do the solid queue stuff in a work project because we're too reliant on Redis and the old way of doing things. And like, there's no way that we're going to change that anytime soon.
Yeah, love it. I mean, the distinction that you can make is basically broaden your skill, like learning a completely new language or framework for a side project, or like go deeper on the skills that you already have. And I think both are valuable solutions, and also depending a little bit on your overall experience. But I love your approach on saying, I just want to get it done and I want to get better at what I do. And I can also take the advantage of, because that's my day work, right?
Yeah, that's well. And the real goal at the end of the day is to make sure I stay hireable. Like it's pretty competitive at the moment. So
absolutely.
I don't see myself as being the smartest person, so I better work hard. That's the way I see it.
I mean, it's a tough economic situation. I mean, obviously everywhere around the world. So maybe we can talk a little bit about that, how like the tech industry looks like in Australia.
Yeah, it's pretty good over here, actually. Like, considering how
probably the most important representative of the tech industry in Australia is Atlassian, because everyone knows them. Yeah.
Well, like they built Jira, and I think they moved out of Australia, but they've still got a huge presence here. Canva's another one out of Australia that's worth paying attention to. They've probably done a bit more damage recently, at least, because people claim that Canva knocked off Adobe a little bit because no one's subscribing to Creative Cloud anymore because they just use Canva. Jira and Confluence and Bitbucket, they're all super well-known, especially in the last decade.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everyone uses them. But other than that, like, what is the overall market
I think a lot of my jumping around happened because I felt like I was a bit unsecure in my job. Like, when I was in desktop support, I loved doing support. I would have stayed in support forever, but I couldn't get paid enough to have a comfortable life here. And, it wasn't that safe. Like, we were getting replaced or weren't needed as much because hardware wasn't dying as often. And eventually everyone just ended up on thin clients and remote systems. So that's what happened. I saw that falling from right under me. The same sort of thing happened with networking and systems where people were going remote or cloud-based, and that meant you didn't need someone on site for the network gear anymore, like, or you'd have multiple sites all of a sudden instead of just one, and it just got worse and worse. So that's what I saw. The other big thing about Australia is everything's Microsoft. I work in a Mac or Linux sort of world, but to get out of the Microsoft world was so difficult. And no one would hire you if you'd come from Microsoft, they'd be like, oh, you don't know this or you don't know that. And it took me forever to convince someone on the Linux side to let me over.
So does that also mean that there is a lot more demand like for .NET?
Not so much. Maybe. But I only saw it from the support and the operations side of things. I was doing code. So I didn't actually see much of that side of it. But it was more the systems and for the users and that side of, like, if a company had 1,000 desktops, they'd all be Windows-based, for example, and all the software would be Microsoft-related. They'd all use Teams or whatever the equivalent was. So Australia was very Microsoft-heavy.
Okay, got it. Thank you. So what would be one piece of advice that you would have for someone who's just starting out in tech? Given the economic situation, given all the insecurities about AI replacing all of us, if you were to start over, what would you do?
I wouldn't actually start over. I'd do exactly what I did, and it's just use whatever.
I mean, if you were in a position where you could like or had to, given you have no experience right now, like in that situation, what would you do to get into that?
Keep working hard from where I am. The most important thing is sort of to find how you cost or make the company money. So figure out what they care about and just focus on that. For example, I did quite well where I am by focusing on cost optimization and making sure our resources were the right resources to be using, because I can't earn the company money directly from being a DevOps engineer. I can earn the money or can earn the company money by making them not spend it. So that's how I did it. And if I wanted to speed run my way up, I'd find those and just try to focus on the skills around that. If you're starting off in support, it's about just doing everything as hard, like putting the most that you can into everything that you've got, and eventually you get the attention. That's what happened to me anyway. Because I loved what I did, eventually people took notice and it got me into better opportunities or better positions. Like, because they knew I was good at the support stuff, they were willing to give me a go on the network equipment. And like when I got my CCNA, they were like, oh, this guy, not only does he do it properly, but he also got the certificate. And that's when I got the offer for a job that was actually networking related. So it wasn't because I applied for anything. I just brute forced my way. I didn't let them say no, basically.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, that's also like what people say most, like in this kind of situation for giving advice, is actually stay as close to the revenue as you can. Yeah. Like, be it revenue in and of itself, or like be it revenue in terms of cost reduction. That's basically the same page on the balance sheet. And just put the work in and put yourself out. I mean, is it fair to summarize it that way?
What sucks a lot of the time is like in early days, like I can achieve the same level of work as I would be now, but it took me 4 or 5 days to do what it'd take me now in 2 or 3 hours. So that's the difference. You just got to push so much harder at the start.
And how do you think AI contributes, like this whole vibe coding stuff? And how much do you think contributes to the things being harder right now?
Yeah, well, it makes it much harder, that's for sure, because the competition has gone up significantly. But I know since GPT-3 came out, I've basically been studying and training every day just because I know there's 100,000 other people out there doing exactly the same thing. So I'm a single parent and I've got a kid, so I've got to protect my future a lot more in a way. So I'm going to be working my ass off. And that's not really something that people had to worry about before AI.
Yeah.
I think the intensity is going to go up a lot. But then also, so is the opportunity. Because if AI doesn't really follow through and deliver what it says or what people say it's going to do, then anyone that's good at using it is going to have such an advantage that no one else has.
Absolutely.
Say, for example, like I made Tech Deck. I could make Tech Deck again in a week because I've already done it now. Well, I know how to do it. But until you've done that, you couldn't do the same thing.
With vibe coding,
yeah, that's right. Well, even with vibe coding, that still took me months to put together.
Yeah,
and I know where the AI is going to fall down, and I know where, because you can't just chuck everything into AI and get the results.
No, you can't.
You wouldn't believe the amount of times I put my problem in and it didn't figure the problem out, and it turns out that it never would have figured the problem out either. Like a lot of them turned out to be me finding out what was wrong. And after it knows the answer, it'll help you. But until it gets that answer, you don't know what's wrong.
Yeah. And I think that's like the interesting part about the whole vibe coding story is that it gives you a completely new skill set as a developer, because you were a developer. You were used to getting Jira tasks or something like that with precise information on what to do. And now you are in a position when you're vibe coding to like come up with new ideas and then articulate those ideas in a way that an AI can understand it. So basically, the more we are vibe coding as developers, the more we are getting product managers somehow. Right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'm actually quite lucky. I've never had a role where I've got to be handed work. Like, I've always had to find work and come up with the ideas and the, like, I've done all that. So I think that's given me a head start. I just assumed everyone had to do that, but apparently that's not the case.
There are a lot of developers
out there. A lot
of
people just get given a Jira ticket. Because these days, if I can give you a Jira ticket, I may as well just do the work myself. Because I was going to be able to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that there was a lot of insightful talk. Thank you so much for it.
Oh, it's good. It's good to be on. I haven't seen Riverside before. It looks kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I use it like it's now the fourth recording. Works quite good, and also it has like AI to do some shorts out of whole conversation. So that's very cool.
It reminds me of StreamYard a bit.
Yeah, it's basically StreamYard for recording.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, thank you, Dean.
No, awesome.
Good to see you.
What time is it over there for you?
Oh, it's 8:30 in the morning.
Oh, okay, cool. So just starting. It's 4:30.
Starting here. So you have a little bit of the day ahead.
Yeah, that's right. I've been recovering from surgery, so I haven't been doing much. I was in last week. Nothing exciting.
Thank you.
Getting old.
Thank you.
All right.